When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 149 of Good Humans Podcast with my main man, Louis Phillips. This guy's got a story that we can all be inspired by, and yeah, really fun episode that I enjoyed recording. A big thank you, of course, to Wild Earth Australia. These guys have been the go-to for me to get all of my equipment for my upcoming 100-kilometer ultra marathon, the UTA Blue Mountains 100-kilometer ultra. It's going to be pretty hectic for me. I'm 40 days out while recording this little intro right now, and I just picked up a whole bunch of new gear from Wild Earth. I got my running vest. I got some new poles. I got a head torch. I got a bunch of my nutrition stuff, and I'm going to be getting a few more things to make sure I've got everything on my mandatory gear list. So if you want to get involved and grab some gear for your running, your adventure needs, your hiking needs, then head into Wild Earth Australia. So I've partnered with Wild Earth to gear up for the UTA, and I'm stoked that they're going to provide my listeners with an epic discount. So if you go to the show notes, you'll see a few little things about Wild Earth. Click on that, and that's going to give you access to Wild Earth's sale price all day, every day, whether they're on sale or not. So to activate the personalized pass, just follow the steps in the show notes. Click the link. It's going to take you to a little sign up page. Add your details in and then put in the Good Human Pod where it asks for the group name. That's going to give you a little My Club wallet pass, which you can add to your wallet on your phone. Or if you log in online, you can shop online at wildearth.com.au or head into the Burley Head store or the store in Brisbane. As I said, I've been going into this store multiple times a week to get all my gear for my run, and they are the biggest legends ever. And yeah, great that you guys can get a discount for every time you shop with them by using that little thing in the show notes. Also, a big thank you, of course, to Drink a Rapper, the brain drink. These guys have been supporting my podcast and the Good Human Factory for a long time now. I drink this stuff every single day. It makes my brain perform better short term, and it also is doing good things for my brain in the long term with my brain health. If you want to learn more about their science, it's all developed by neuroscientists. Millions of dollars of clinical studies have gone into this stuff. You can head over to their website, drinkarepa.com. That's drink, A-R-E-P-A.com. Check out the science, learn about the studies they've been doing, check out all their different products from the capsules, the powders, to their light and sparkling and their performance drink. Delicious black currant flavor, great alternative to have instead of energy drinks, to have instead of a second coffee, or just to have instead of a fizzy drink. All natural, really tasty, and you guys are going to love it. Use the code GOODHUMAN over on their website for a big 25% off, or just pick some up in Coles or Woolies. Okay, Louis, far out. This was a fun episode. I have been following Louis' stuff for a while now. I saw him on Big Brother last year and was quite intrigued by the guy. And then, yeah, once I got into my running, one of the first people that popped up when I said, who should I get on the podcast, was Louis. He's someone who, yeah, has been putting out some really interesting content around running, trying to encourage people to get into it, really beginner level content, which has been making him go viral, which is so great. I think giving people really digestible content and understanding and explaining the why behind it is really cool. It was nice to hear all about Louis' childhood, to hear about his gap year after school working in the south of France in yachts. He also then did university, didn't really love it, started a business, 9-to-5 fitness, but then kind of stepped aside from that to focus on his own content, worked in the AFL for their social media for a while, didn't love that, and then he went into Big Brother, and since getting out, his social profile has, yeah, blown up, trying to really help people with their running. He's launched his own app, Interval, which is just epic. It's like having a running coach in your pocket, so you can learn all about that in the show notes as well. Lastly, if you are new to this podcast, do me a huge favor. Go and hit that like or subscribe button. It takes you like 2 seconds and it really helps me move this podcast up the rankings. Also, if you're enjoying it, just send it to a friend. If you got some value out of this episode, if you feel like, yeah, it made an impact on your life, send them a text, send it in your group chat with your running club, or just chuck it up on your Instagram story, tag both me and Louis, and I'm sure we'll be stoked to see it and reshare it. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's jump into the chat.
Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Louis Phillips.
Thanks for having me, Cooper. A fun morning together, mate.
I know. It's been a pretty wild little morning for us. You hit me up. Well, I hit you up a couple of days ago. I was like, mate, I'm going to be down in Melbourne. We've been speaking for a couple months about potentially getting this podcast done. And I was like, I'm going to be in Melbourne on Thursday. This is like 2 days ago. I'm pretty bad with like giving people much notice. And you're like, I've got some time on Thursday. And then you messaged me yesterday going, I'm actually going to do 25Ks tomorrow morning. Do you want to come? And there's probably not many people that usually just say yes to the like casual 25 tomorrow.
Mate, I was stoked because you know what it's like. Like running long distance is so lonely. Mm. And like I've lost a lot of my just like long distance running mates to injuries or to just like time management issues. Yeah. Or like they just, you know, have to work. Yeah. So I'm doing these long Ks by myself and it's killing me. So any opportunity I have to bring someone into it, and it's so worthwhile. Like we did 25 this morning. Honestly, the run didn't start until about 20.
Yeah.
It felt like.
Yeah, you know, seriously, we felt good until
we felt
like,
so good.
When we made that last turn was when I was like, ooh, okay. And I feel like both of us like kind of just met each other, didn't want to show too much.
Yeah, literally getting a bit wobbly. Well, for those who live in Melbourne that are listening, like we did the whole kind of Yarra Trail. We went all the way up to the Balti Bridge, came right back, and then finished with a gallop up the Anderson Street Hill. And Melburnians know that that's a solid effort. So we finished strong.
But no, it's good. 25Ks. What did we do? Like 5:20 pace. Pretty good. We're both training right now for ultra marathons. That's why you're on this podcast, I guess, a little bit today. I'm currently training for my 100K ultra. You're training for two ultras in May.
Two ultras, yeah.
Which is going to be really cool. So we're both pretty aligned, I guess, on that. But I think, we have a lot of friends in common. We have a lot of sort of life experience, I feel like, in common with the whole, I guess, social media world and trying to grow a profile and influence people in a positive way around their health and trying to make healthier decisions. So I'm really excited to jump into this chat.
Me too, yeah, absolutely.
Two little things I start with. First, you've been looking at this can that's sitting on the table. So for anyone listening who has listened to many of my podcasts, the Good Humans podcast is sponsored by Drink a Repa. It's a brain drink. I told you a bit about it on the run this morning, but all backed by neuroscience, natural, no caffeine. It's pretty delicious. And it's amazing. So we're going to crack it. And these are like brand new cans. Like you're like one of the first people in Australia to have it out of a can. It's normally in a glass bottle.
A Repa. Cheers. Love it. Cheers, mate.
Let me know what you think of the black currant.
That's good. It's exactly what, when you were talking about it on the run, I was just craving it the whole time. I was like, now I want like a berry kind of black currant drink.
So good, but make our brain fired up for the chat. But
hit the spot.
Yeah, thanks to them for supporting. But the other thing I always start Good Humans Podcast with is, what are you grateful for right now in life?
Man, I'm grateful for so much. I've been super fortunate in my life and particularly recently. I did have a think about this question a little bit and I definitely am just so grateful for like my job and exactly what I do and the flexibility behind that. You know, we were talking about on the run today, not having a boss or like people to call to or people to, you know, speak to or have to, you know, speak to. It's so nice to just be able to get up, go for a 25K run with Cooper and then do a bloody podcast on a Thursday and not have to, you know, adhere to someone. The other thing is like just the passion and kind of being able to create a tool. Obviously I'm building an app or I've built an app at the moment along with a business partner of mine and just seeing that kind of come to fruition and actually help people and like seeing that and using that as a tool. And I think seeing the stories behind that, I'm super grateful for. And you know, it might sound like a sales pitch, but I genuinely am like really proud and grateful of that.
No, absolutely. Creating a product that is genuinely helping people is something that I'm very into as well. Obviously with the Good Human Factory, we've got obviously the service of my workshops, the merch, the podcast, and a whole bunch of different community activations. it's pretty special when you get a message that you've inspired someone to go for their first 5K run and they feel amazing and now their brother's doing it with them. Like, it's got to feel good, right?
Oh, incredible. And the best thing about, like, Interval, this app, it's a running app.
We will get into it.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, but it's like, I can quantify that. It's got a metric of how many runs people have done. And it's like, we've done 20,000 kilometers as a community. Wow. Like, that is so cool. If I, just by creating an app, 20,000 kilometers have been run from a community. Like, that's pretty awesome.
That's cool.
I'm proud of that.
I'm so excited to watch that tick up to a million and
and
so on, which is going to be epic. But today we're going to get to know your story. You've got a pretty unique one. I guess some people might know you from Big Brother last year. I'm excited to get to that part of your story because you had a very unique experience. A lot of people go in there hoping for profile growth, but you had profile growth in the year between filming and going on it, and you actually went backwards. So you're like the anti-influencer on Big Brother.
Butchered me, yeah.
Which we'll catch up to that, but I'm really excited to get to know your story. I've listened to a few things of you on podcast and know quite a bit about from post-school, but I haven't heard too much about prior to that. And you did say to me before when we're on the run that you went to a private school, so excited to get to know the upbringing and a bit more about your youth. So as much as you're willing to share, let's go back to the start. What do I need to know about your upbringing before high school, let's call it, that shaped you to be the man you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's a really common one, particularly for people in our space, in that kind of entrepreneurial world, in the content creator game. But surprise, surprise, I was a bit of a menace at school. And I was a bit of a menace from young to some degree, just because I was really struggling. I always struggled with school. I had ADHD, auditory processing, and the mainstream style of learning never worked for me. I come from the best family. My mum and dad are incredibly supportive with everything and anything I do. Same with my sister. She's my best mate. So it wasn't an issue in terms of home life. Luckily, my dad is a teacher, though. He recognized from my young age, that the mainstream wasn't working. So I actually got put into a Steiner school. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have. When?
Yeah, so that was from year one. Dad got on the front foot. Yeah, year one through to year five. No. So I did prep. I was originally in Singapore with my family. We're living there for mum's work, but came over to Australia, did prep in Melbourne at Ripponlea Primary School, and just dad was saying, this kid's hating it too much. Like, you know, there can be some kind of turbulence in terms of young kids and learning, but he is hating it and loathing it.
Oh, wow.
In a really concerning way. So I got put into a Steiner school, which was just fantastic for me. And for those that don't know, it's like an alternative style of learning. It's essentially you're learning with your hands, like you're learning maths with kind of like visual learning styles.
Working outside with community projects outside, and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A lot, you know, in the dirt. It's kind of like a hippie way of learning is the kind of the best way to describe it.
Because I can't believe that I'd never seen or heard of a Steiner school until I was like, literally until I was like 25, man.
Yeah.
I moved to Byron and I was living up the road from the Steiner school there. And then someone explained it to me. I was like, oh my God, I wish I went there. That sounds like the ultimate way of learning for people who might not fit into that mainstream style of learning. So yeah, how was that experience
it
up until?
It was incredible. So Steiner, you have the same teacher from year prep all the way through to year six. And then I think the same from year seven all the way through to year 12.
Okay.
So I had the same teacher. She was great for me. There was times we didn't get along, so on. But just fantastic. The kids in Steiner are the most beautiful kids you'll ever meet. Like anyone you meet from Steiner, the nicest, happiest. It sounds like a bit culty, but it's a very kind of beautiful environment. So got through Steiner until the end of year five, finished up there and got put into Wesley College, a good private school here in Melbourne. That was a pretty big shift.
I bet.
Lucky enough for Wesley, like, they recognized that it was going to be a struggle and put me in, you know, straight into all the learning and kind of the special ed side of things. And I think from a young age, I started to recognize that I'm different from other kids, and I had a quite negative connotation with that. I remember telling mum and dad I'm an idiot, like I'm so dumb, just constantly reminding myself of that.
Mm.
And I was getting put into these classes, getting taken out of PE to go and do special ed maths and stuff. And it's hitting my confidence just constantly. Mm. So I needed to do that. And it's what I needed to do to get up to that, you know, level of learning.
Yeah, because you've gone to the Steiner school, not that you'd learn all these other skills that are so important that most kids don't have. that maybe they can add up and write a sentence a little bit better, but you've got the life skills that come with the Steiner School.
Exactly.
What about sport?
Yeah, pretty sporty. Yeah, pretty relatively. Like, tiny kid. I was so small all the way through. I don't think I hit puberty till about like year 11 and a half. Like, and I was tiny. So,
I think it's a confidence, eh? How bad's not having pubes at school?
Mate. And so, Wesley, you go on all these like camps. We went a month or a term in Clune. So you're living with people for a whole term and like with like you have these guys. Anyway, it's a really good thing. But I didn't have any pubes. Like, I'm so prepubescent, like just terrified.
Isn't it funny bringing that up? I went to one of Tommy Herschel, this guy that does mental health workshops with men at school, or the young kids or boys at school. And I just went and watched and spectated. And one of the questions he asked at the start, and I haven't thought about this since I was a kid. And when he brought it up, I was like, oh my God, that hits home so hard. He asked a question like, all right, it start, like opens with like, it's chill. And he's like, all right, boys, so what did, what do we normally talk about out in the playground? And like, and we're at like a Catholic college, and like one of them was like Fortnite, and then someone else was like girls or like hot sisters, or, and yeah, it was kind of, and then someone goes, pubes, not having pubes. And I was like, I haven't thought about that in so long. I've fucking had hairs on my balls and under my chin, under my arms for a while.
Yeah.
But back then it was like, I can remember having so much anxiety about it. Like when cause I was a surfer, so I had my shirt off, even down the beach around my surf mates. Like I'd be so anxious and awkward about lifting my arms if I didn't have hairs under it. Isn't that so funny? Like how much that mattered when you're
crazy. Younger. It was the biggest thing. And I remember, like, I distinctly remember, you know, like kind of not talking about it with my parents, not in like, mum and dad, I don't have pubes, but it was a conversation at the dinner table one day, and mum made a passing joke like, oh, your father never hit puberty. And I, like, my whole world, I thought, I'm never going to hit puberty. So I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life.
How do we take words as gospel when we're kids sometimes?
And it was just a pass, you know, mum just taking the piss out of dad. Yeah. And like that just, I remember for a good 6 months, I'm like, I'm fucked. Like, I need to see a doctor. Like, how can I go about this quietly? Anyway, I eventually did get pubes and everything works fine. But
I don't think we're going to go there in this conversation.
Yeah. It's a good start.
Yeah. The reason we're going there was we're talking about sport. You're a pretty small kid, massively into AFL down here in Melbourne. I don't know a single person that doesn't end or start or at somewhere in the middle of a conversation bring up the AFL.
Yeah, it's big.
So what was AFL like for you being a small kid? Did that hit the confidence too, not being...
Yeah, I loved it. My thing was always like pace and being like quick. Okay. It was great for me. And playing footy, I was like my whole world, to be honest. Mm. So I was playing footy and doing pretty well. I think I only made the twos at Wesley because, you know, by year 12, like, you know,
these guys that are all half the day is probably playing the AFL.
They're sinking beers and rooting on the weekend, and I'm, you know, patting my pet bunny at home, like going horse riding with mum and dad. So it was, yeah, different kettle of fish, but had a lot of fun with it. Constantly getting taken out of classes for like special ed and all that. I think it just created something in my head of like always needing to prove and like this. I hated being doubted, and I still do today. Like the second someone doubts me. And this can be good and bad. The second someone doubts me, I like need to prove them like wrong, or like I need to prove to myself that I'm not who I think I am.
Mm-hmm.
Got through all of that, and then finished school and was into uni.
But there was a gap between there. Yeah. I love this part of your story because I've done a bit of research, and your parents recommended going on a gap year, not going straight into uni, correct? How did that come about? How'd that conversation come up? Because you said you, from my, listening to some of your other episodes, you wanted to go straight to uni, but they told you not to. Where do you think that advice came from, and how good was that for you?
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, another huge W from mum and dad. But I think me wanting to go to uni, I didn't want to go to uni for myself. I wanted to go to uni because that's what you did from the school I was at. Yeah. So it's like you finish, so you go through school and then you finish school, you go straight to uni, do accounting, you know, economics, et cetera.
Law, medicine.
Finish that, go straight and work for Deloitte, KPMG, flog yourself until you're 50 and then
have a good couple of years.
Yeah, have a kid and just the cycle continues. So I was like, oh, that's what I have to do. And if you don't do that, then like you're a loser and you're an idiot. So I was like, came out of school, right, I got to go to uni now. Mum and dad are like, chill out. Like, you're not no way. You know, you need at least a
year. Still haven't got pubes, mate.
Yes, still haven't got pubes, brother. Look at you. You're going down a few more years. And so they said to me, like, no, you need to, like, look into a gap year and think about that. So Dad had done a bit of research. We had some family friends over in Europe, in the south of France, and they were right into, like, yachting. So working on super yachts, be it a deckhand, be it a, you know, so on, like just having a job within that industry. So, you know, a little bit of time passed. I think this is 2017, I finished school 2016. So 2017, went over to Europe in the south of France in Antibes, which is just down from Monaco, down from Nice. And yeah, it's just started trying to get work on private yachts and super yachts. And I did that, got a few jobs. It was an incredible experience. I was such a young, like such a baby to be there.
Did you have any experience? Like what if someone's listening right now going like, how the hell can I just go and do that? What advice would you have for someone who's just finished school and they're like, you know what, I don't want to go straight to uni. Maybe I want to go and travel, but work while I travel. What advice would you have for someone?
Yeah, I'd recommend doing it first and foremost. I think first thing is you got to get your bread up. Like you need a little bit of cash. So have a part-time job or have a job that you can work for the first half of the year and then head over there. The next thing is you need to get an STCW, which is like your ticket to be able to work on these yachts.
Yeah.
It's like a week or two weeks long.
Qualification.
Yeah, it's like a course. I did mine in Antibes and I'd recommend doing that because what you do is you do the course there and then you meet other people.
Yeah.
And then with those other people, you can get an Airbnb together and you limit your costs by, you know, 60% instead of staying in like crew houses, which are like so expensive.
Yeah.
So get your STCW, work, get an Airbnb, find some mates, and then it's all about dock walking and heading up and down these docks at 5 a.m, handing out your resume, hoping that hopefully they'll give you a job. And there's a few things that help you get a job. So having a boat license helps, and Australia luckily has like, it's like international. So if you have a boat license in Australia, it applies anywhere. Jet ski license really helps as well. So I got both of those here in Melbourne. And then any other qualifications on top, anything else that's going to make you stand
first
out.
First aid.
Even like if you're a plumber, if you're, you know, like that kind of stuff, if you're an electrician, that's up.
You're stepping up.
You're stepping right up. So yeah, would highly recommend, but did that and didn't get a whole lot of work, to be honest. Got enough. Wasn't going to, you know,
come home with a bunch of money.
And retire. Got enough to, I think, do a little bit more travel around Europe, which was Berlin, Amsterdam, Paris, so on. Fun. Which is awesome when I was 18 and just like learned a whole lot about myself.
Sick. And then you come home from there, then to uni. What'd you study at uni and how long did that last before the pivot?
So started doing agribusiness, like farming business essentially. And just learned straight away, this sucks, like uni in general. I thought the course was quite good, but university
13 years studying to go and do it again.
Yeah, obviously. And it's
by choice.
and I think like particularly I see like medicine, law, you know, economics, like those degrees are important. We need them. We need universities and we don't like the courses or the content that they are teaching are relevant. But doing like a standard business degree, I found like they were just so out of touch, man. Like I had an e-commerce class where they were talking about like handing out flyers in a mailbox, like as a way, you know, word of mouth to spread word about your new business. And it's like at the time I was building up 9 to 5 fitness, which I'm sure we'll go into. Like I was building up this e-commerce business and it was doing numbers and they're talking about like handing in. And I'm like, this, like I'm not learning here.
Yeah.
I'm objectively, this is, I'm losing brain cells to be here. So kept going with that. I'm technically still enrolled, so I've deferred.
Okay.
I didn't get it done. I'm planning on getting it done though.
Yeah.
I want to do it just for the principal, tick it off. I've got a whole lot of hex debt, so I may as well get something out of it, whether it be just a certificate. But yeah, in the process there of uni was I built 9 to 5 Fitness alongside my mate Gab, and we just built it up and got on TikTok, and it was through COVID. And
yeah, tell me what that was and where the idea came from. And you're obviously into your fitness and your health to start it. COVID hits. Where does that idea come from, and how do you launch it?
Yeah, so we're both training at the time, lifting weights. I was playing a bit of footy, nothing crazy. But getting a lot of questions and comments about, you know, body shape, size, building muscle. all of that kind of thing, fitness in general. So, and Gab was as well. He was in Malaysia at the time, and we both kind of, well, you know, always in communication, but we both came to each other at the same time and said, I want to start like a business, like a fitness business. Gab's thing was like doing fitness programs. Mine was like doing apparel. So we came together, pretty much pulled it all together really fast, and then recognized early, like, the only way this business is going to work is if we do content.
Yeah.
So content started. That's where we got on TikTok. And like, originally we started the business with the idea of like not posting our faces on the content. So just like the clothing or just like, you know, the programs. But we learned really fast. Like, you're not selling a thing unless there's a personality to the brand, at least like in its infancy. So we started that, doing content, TikTok, just taking the absolute piss out of ourselves. And I remember our first video that took off was like Gab doing these, I forgot what they're called. It's like these, it's quite an erotic looking exercise, and he was super sweaty, and I like filmed him doing this exercise. He was like kicking his legs off the back of a bench, essentially. Anyway, whatever. And it hit like this like LGBT section on TikTok, like Brazilian LGBT, and they were just pumping us up like hottest guys ever on. And that was like our first one of like, we got like 10k followers from that first video. So then from there we're like, all right, here we go, like, we know what we need to do. We're just hitting the algorithm every time, and we had such a good process where like we'd both post like 3 videos a day, so to one account, like 6 videos a day, and it was just growing. And yeah, so kept going with that and found out our straps, and was able to quit our jobs and do it full time.
Yeah, wow. So that was doing like programs for people wanting to get better and learn more about fitness, and then also doing some merch. Merch is hard, eh?
Yeah, brutal.
Margins were way better in 2020. That's when I started doing my merch, and I was paying like $9 a shirt. Now I'm paying like 20.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, you can't make any money anymore. It kills you. I bet my prices are the same.
Yeah, exactly. And they're expected to be the same, aren't they, from the customers. But yeah, merch sucked. It made not much money. We sold out most things, but I think our first order was like 300 pairs of socks. And it's like, I don't have 300, you know, friends and family. So once we sold to friends and family, it's like, all right, well, now what do we need to do?
Yeah.
So anyway, we got that done. And then the merch was more of like a passion side.
The merch is more of a marketing tool anyway. That's why.
Yeah. And learned so much about dealing with suppliers and so on, and stuff I'll, you know, never forget. But yeah, essentially, you know, that, and then 9to5 Fitness kind of ran its course over a period of 3 years. Gab and I started butting heads a little bit, and I like left the business, but internally. So no one knew, because at the time it was very much like Gab and my business. So if one of us goes,
yeah,
you might lose 50% of the... Mm-hmm. So I said, look, I'm happy to be involved, but we need to figure out a way to...
Change to...
Yeah, this needs to change. So came up with a plan, and that all worked out. And through that period, I started looking at like, okay, well, what else can I do? Like, I'm not, you know, earning money. Like, I was earning a little bit from 9to5 Fitness, but not enough to keep my head above the water. And I got a job at the AFL doing social media. So... learned really fast that's exactly what I don't want to do ever. It reminded me a little bit of my first ever job, which was working at KFC, in the sense of like no freedom. I was like pretty much getting people coffees was like my level in the job. And I just remember thinking like, I'm so limited by whoever is above me. So my boss at the time, like, just lovely bloke, but just like no passion, and fair enough, he'd probably been there for 20 years, like he couldn't care less. So I was like, well, this is just reflecting on me as well. And kind of stuck at that for a year, and then found out I was going on Big Brother.
How'd that come about? Did you get headhunted, or did you apply, or...
Yeah, I had a message, like a dodgy looking message, actually.
There's always a dodgy message. It was about weird shows.
Yeah, it was weird. And I thought it was fake, so I left it. And then my mate, now housemate, Tom, had the same message, and he said, oh, look, I'm going to do this application for Big Brother. I was like, oh shit, I have one of those messages. So I was like, I may as well reply.
And he didn't get on, and you did.
Yeah, he didn't get on. He'll tell you didn't want to go on.
Yeah.
But I remember him going to 3 of the year. Anyway, so I, next day, like, replied to it. The day after, I've got a Zoom call with the, you know, producer. And I remember, like, Mate, I just sold myself.
Yeah, did you play it up? Oh, like, oh, Craig, controversy. And
Craig, yeah, love girls and like all about my muscles and like it was, it was a good lesson.
I did the opposite when I did a Big Brother one once. I was like, oh, I'll make people meditate. And I was just like, this guy's not getting on TV.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I did that, to be honest. Like, I remember at one point I had my top off in this interview singing and like singing to a song. Like, and that producer would have that video because they record all
Please
the...
send so it
to So I would pray that that doesn't...
See the light of day.
Doesn't he? Yeah, see the light of day. But anyway... Went through that process. It was the longest process trying to get on this show.
You get all the medical checks.
Medicals, their blood. They're taking blood out of me to, you know, see if I can go on the show. Eventually, I mean, I got told I was going to be intruder. And then, you know, 5 p.m. on a Thursday night, they called, said, we've had someone pull out. We need you here for the main show. So can you pack your bags and fly out tomorrow morning, 5 a.m.? Cool. So... I was actually driving up to mum and dad's farm.
So you had one day less in the hotel like the other people.
Yeah, literally. Exactly. So, and then got all my stuff ready, packed, went over to Sydney where it was, Sydney Olympic Park, and hopped into quarantine. So you have to hop into a hotel prior to the show.
Yeah,
I think it was like a week.
A week? Yeah. And just put you in a room by yourself.
Yeah, I loved it. I was just stoked.
Just watch Netflix.
Yeah, just watch Netflix all the time, kick back. And they like have minders for you. So they like take you for a walk and stuff. It was crazy. And it kind of gets you into the process. And then, onto the show. I thought at the time the show was going to be the biggest thing in Australia. They obviously pump it up like that. Couldn't have been further from the truth. Or the reality, rather.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like Big Brother used to, we were talking about this on the run as well this morning. Big Brother used to be all about like this representation of all demographics of people in Australia. And they just tried to make it a dating show this year, which I think people like after a few episodes were like, fuck, I mean, like one of my like best mates, Luke, was on there, which you actually butted heads with.
Yeah, we didn't get along. Shout out Luke.
Yeah, sorry, Luke is the man. We love Luke. Yeah, so you do the show, but the thing that's interesting about your guys' season was they just kept pushing back, actually putting it out. And this is a period where we're going to get to talking about your running, which is I put out on social media. What should I ask these Louie and Lucy, who I'm recording with later today? And someone's like, just talk to them about running. Don't talk to them for so long about their story. And I was like, too bad, I'm talking about their story. Some people will get to the running, but this is where we're going to get to your running.
Yeah.
So you go in the house, you have did you get top three?
Yeah, made top three. So I was like the strategic one or whatever, kind of slithering around the house. To be honest, I just saw like a bit of a gap in the house that no one wanted to play the game. And I was like, oh, beautiful. I just played the game then.
Yeah.
Did pretty well.
Was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
Like, I actually did. I really enjoyed the competitive element.
Yeah.
Okay. Like really enjoyed that side. There's tough days in there. You know, you're sleep deprived, calorie deficient, and like don't know the time. So you're out of whack the whole time.
Oh, you don't have any clocks or you don't have the
time? No clocks. So yeah, like, yeah. And they try and muck with your head in like certain different ways. So you're kind of a bit frazzled, but I generally enjoyed it. But yeah, made top three, didn't win, but, you know, was a little bit of fun.
But you didn't win. Did the winner not obviously get found out till a year later, huh?
Yeah, later.
Did people vote? Was it a vote?
Yeah,
it was.
Well, apparently, yeah, that's what they're... I mean, you don't get to count the votes, so...
Yeah, that's interesting because it was perfect. You'd grown this mega following in the gap of going on the show and then the show coming out. So you probably had, like, between your... You know, crew, you could have got some serious voting behind it.
But yeah.
Who knows with those shows.
Didn't work. Anyway.
Yeah, so let's talk about that period now. So you get out of the house, back to normal life, and it doesn't come out for 12 months. So that's where your life, I guess, really changes. I guess you'd even describe it like that. So tell me about that period. Why running? Why the change in direction? And what that 12 months was like before the show came out.
So get out of the house, bit of a fire under my ass. So don't have a job at the AFL. I don't have a business backing me and I've got to pay rent. So figure it out pretty quick. I've like running content and running in general has always been like a huge passion of mine. Anytime I did running content, it'd do really well online. So I just thought I'd start doing more and more running content. But I think also just like the post Big Brother blues or, you know, the post kind of whatever that whole thing was coming out, you're a little bit frazzled. And I was genuinely just going for runs to clear my head. So I like with that, like doing certain runs, so like 10Ks around an oval without headphones. I was like, oh, I might like document this. So I did document it. And instead of doing like the normal style of content, which was very kind of lights flashing, loud music, you know, bing and bong, and it looked shit, I like pulled it right back. I think I had a soft piano in the background and just spoke about like why I'm going to run. You know, like I feel shit, like I need to go for a run. And like, I don't want to run, but I'm going to do it because I know I'll feel better after.
People could relate.
Yeah, so that relatability aspect. And did it, and it started taking off. And, you know, I think I grew 200,000 followers in 3 months or so, or 2 months on on Instagram. And
just reels going just, viral.
Yeah, just want to more. And I think the 3 years prior of doing content had kind of prepared me for this, because I knew exactly what to do the second something
and
goes viral.
And what not to do.
And what not to do. So I was like, hit it twice as hard.
Yeah.
You know, I was posting two times a day. Like my whole life was revolving around like doing kind of content and reels. And then while I was doing all that, had managers as well, which was really handy. So they were kind of working the other end of like brand
deals. Did you have a manager before you spiked the growth when you were just like at 10K or whatever?
Yeah, I did. So you already had one. Luckily, and I only had that manager because like my housemate Tom was just like, he was with them, and so was Gab, and we were all living together. Yeah. And I think the manager said, yeah, look, we'll take all three of you. And I just, they were like, yeah.
That's perfect.
Like he might do it, you know, one reel every 6 months and is what it is.
And then it blew up. And yeah, what sort of strategy would you offer for people who are like, fuck, I've been trying so hard to grow my content? And I know you speak about this on podcasts quite often, but maybe just a quick little bit of advice for people who are like, oh, I want to find my niche and grow my content, because you've got a pretty specific strategy with it. Do you want to share it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't have that. I'll get into that. So it's a 70-30 split is what Cooper's talking about. But at the start, I didn't really have that like whole strategy. My thing was like vulnerability and just being relatable. So like I constantly get told, people coming up to me go, I love the way like you say you don't want to do a run but you still do it. And it's like people after working a, you know, like 6 day a week like working week, they don't want to do the run after work, they don't want to do the run, but you do it because you'll feel better after. So like that relatability was huge. The other thing was like I was documenting like a sub 20 minute 5k and my process behind that. Before I did this, before Big Brother, I probably would have just done, I'm looking to do a sub 20 minute 5K. I did a sub 20 minute 5K. Here's a program. You know, like content, sell. Whereas this, I was like, I don't have anything to sell. I'm just going to do the sub 20 minute 5K and show every single, show how, if it takes me 6 months, I'm going to show how, like that process. So with that, I was going, you know, first run, like almost getting it. Second run, like a training run. Third run attempt, failed, and actually showing that I failed and being pissed off about failing and so on until eventually I got it. So that was the first thing, and like that blew me up. That launched a lot. Now, like implementing kind of what I know and post Big Brother launching, which for those that don't know, absolutely butchered my engagement and butchered my account, and I had to do so much work to get it back to where it was.
Yeah, which is where I kind of went to at the start of this podcast. Most people like go into the show like, ooh, crossing their fingers that they're going to grow from it. You'd already grown that 200,000 followers in the gap of the show being filmed and aired. So they take a control of your account. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so you go on the show and you sign away these papers, like you sign everything. And they, on one of the documents I signed, was like they get full control of the social media while the show is airing.
While it's airing.
Yeah, so couldn't even log in. And like at the time I went on with 10K followers, but by the time the show aired, I'd had 200K or 190 or something. Yeah. So in that process, just like...
But 190,000 people who were following you for running content. Yeah, and it's just like, hey, reality TV
and then,
guy.
Boom, reality TV, blonde hair, like weird ass. So just like had to do so much work post show.
It's so interesting. Yeah. It's like the opposite of probably 99% of people.
Those. And you know, the funny one, like just with the show, and I think I speak for the whole kind of show cohort, was like the Big Brother, the social media team kind of promised us all like, you know, blue ticks and like, you know, verification. And like, the thing is, working in social media, you can actually get something from that. Like having a blue, it helps. There's no doubt about it. It legitimizes
a legitimate
you.
One, not a so paid one.
Just exactly. So like have, and that on TikTok, Snapchat, and like Instagram, just from like a business perspective, it's really helpful. I know for those listening, it might sound like,
but
shit.
But
it does help. So they're kind of promising that throughout the show. And then the second the show finished, like social media said, no, we can't get it. Sorry. So like the whole cohort of the show, like what the fuck? Like at least give us this blue tick. Like this whole show's flopped beyond belief.
Yeah.
Anyway, didn't happen. But Post-show, I was like, right, I've got to grind. Post-show airing, I've got to grind. I've got to get shit back to back up and running. Like, what am I going to do? So I employed this 70-30 content split. And it's essentially 70% of your content focused on casting your net and getting new followers and reaching new people. And then 30% retaining followers and keeping people engaged. Mm. So 70% is like that stuff I do all the time about aerobic base. It's just like
how to run.
How to. It's like the most basic.
Beginners,
And like cop shit sometimes. Like, oh, he's always saying run in zone two or run in. It's like, yeah, it's not for you, mate. Like you're already following me. It's for the next group. Like this is, so you're saying the same thing, but 10 different ways.
Yeah.
And you can do that multiple times a week. So that's 70% of my content is like.
Finding new followers, I've never really heard of that. Cause I feel like, and it's inspired me cause the way that I do the Good Human Factor, I'm like, oh, I've already posted that. I can't post it again. But it's like, no, you should post your best stuff in different ways, multiple times a week. To grow the following, and then with the like next stage of that, like running a ultra marathon, then those followers who are already there are interested and invested. Exactly. Okay, what else is this guy doing?
Yeah, so that's the 30% is like trying to do a sub 40-minute 10K or trying to run two ultra marathons. Like those little kind of almost the videos that take you a lot more time to edit and higher quality, they will retain followers.
Mm.
But you can't have the 30% without the 70%. Yeah. So. I did that and managed to get my account back up and running and from building that.
Mate, and here we are up to this year now, Interval.
Mm.
Tell me about Interval.
Yeah, so Interval's it's a running coach for your pocket and it's an app essentially, and I'm not going to get salesy here. I'll tell you like the ins and outs of it all.
Tell us about the app, because it's not being salesy. It's sharing a tool that you've created for people to get better at running, and this is what this episode is all about. People looking to maybe get introduced to running, or people who are already runners because of this challenge I'm doing right now, 100 days to 100Ks.
Mm.
This is what this episode's about, learning about what Interval is, and then we'll talk maybe about some tips that you have some people who are getting into their running.
Mm, yeah, well, I mean, it's a tool for running, and that's the part I'm like the most excited about and used myself. So essentially, to do all, you know, I've done a three hour 12 marathon, and like I did that in a really short space, and I strongly believe my coach who programs for me has like, he's a bit of a wizard with it. So I get all these questions, how do you do it? Like, how do I train? Can I have a program? I was like, I don't want to just come out with a PDF and email it to you. Like, I find that I've done that, I don't need to do that again. I want something a lot higher level. So my housemate Hess, who's also an app developer, has pretty much built this app in his room for the last year. And it's on the back of trying to get new people into running and show people how to run and in a really palatable, bite-sized kind of, you know, process. So what it is essentially like it'll ask you like multiple onboarding questions. It'll spit out a program for you, which is like best for you. And then you'll do a run. And then after that run, you'll explain how good or bad you feel. And it'll be like a slider. You can write a comment in there as well. With that information, we can like tick you around on a different program every time. So there's 3,800 programs on the app. And what we can do is like, oh, you know, Cooper felt shit after that 25K he did today. Let's put him up to like a little bit of an easier program. And just a minute change.
Mm.
But what it's doing is it's always kind of keeping you at your threshold. So it's always kind of keeping you at a spot where you're pushing yourself, but you're not like cooking yourself. So that's what it is essentially. And then with that, there's a whole community section as well, which is like full of so many cool people, like everyone supporting each other as well.
Mm.
And then, heaps of content as well. So the content side's like my main role for the app, and it's just content upon content. You get like a couple of videos a day to watch and a whole FAQ section as well.
Yeah, sick. So if someone wants to join it, here you go. You can have a little bit of a sell now. Probably ask you some running questions. But what, it's like $5 a week or something, and subscription service through the App Store.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just having a running coach in your pocket.
Running coach in your pocket. So $3.99 a week if you do the monthly process. Less, or it's like $1.99, I think, if you do the yearly. So it's like $100 for a year. So it's super affordable. And you know, there's no doubt, like, it's at its MVP. It's its minimal viable product. It's
early stages.
And I'm so happy with it. But we're doing so much work with so many new features and things we're going to add in, like gamifying it a whole lot mm-hmm. more. We've got a whole lot. We've got experts talking to us about like menstrual cycle tracking and like how we can function that into training for women mm-hmm. and like doing all these really cool things, which bigger apps can't be so dynamic with.
Yeah.
So that's our, you know, big thing is like how dynamic we can be.
Yeah. Keep implementing new stuff yeah. and upgrading it. No, I think it's epic. I'm going to give it a download and
yeah, thanks,
try and
mate.
Add it into my little repertoire. And what, yeah, it's only been out for a month and you said you've got over 1,000 users already. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Epic.
So we've had 3,500 people go through the app. Like wow. they're flogging it and it's...
And like you said, what, 20,000 Ks round?
Yeah, so about 20,000 close to, and it's like, it's so cool. And I'm not sure the exact amount of runs. But
an extra 50 Ks in pop there up. This morning with us too.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. There we go. We're ticking them.
Ticking them over, ticking them over. Mate, I've love getting to know your story. Now, I just want to talk about running a little bit. You've got obviously a great bit of knowledge into it and you share some really simple but effective tips on your page. So let's talk about right now, if I'm finding your page on Instagram, what are you going to find?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of simple tips really. Like I really don't care about the professional runner. Like if you're a really good runner, as you know, it's not my content.
Yeah.
So... I'm more into beginner, like people starting out and like, where do they go? What do they do? I want that person that's like, I can see that running looks fun, but like I'm flogging myself when I go for a 4K run. Mm. Like, how do I do it?
Progress and safely do it, yeah.
Yeah, safely do it and do it so that I enjoy it. So a lot of my content is around like that zone 2 running, slowing it down and just having fun with it. So that's pretty much what you'll find is a lot of content around that, which is kind of 70% of it. And then, you know, also like my own process and like the own, my own things I'm training for.
Tell me about zone 2 running. Something that I know quite a bit about now, but for someone listening right now, they'll be like, what the hell is zone 2 running?
Yeah.
And why zone 2 running? Because I know as someone, and I'm sure you're probably quite similar, like a young man with a, you know, bit of go in him.
Yeah.
You just want to get out there and run hard, but it doesn't work like that. And for me, it's been a massive eye opener to like drop the ego and be like, no, if you want to run 100 Ks in 100 days, you can't just go and run 50 this week and expect, because then you're not going to be able to train for another 2 weeks.
Mm.
So it's really about tapering and, yeah, running in zone 2, which is heart rate. So do you want to explain from your point the importance of zone 2 running and those slow runs from maybe your coach's perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So essentially, like, anyone who comes from a sporting background are going to want to flog themselves when they go for a run. Like, my connotation with running was so negative. It was 2K time trials. It was gut running. It was, like, throwing up and vomiting and just like feeling awful about it. So coming out of Big Brother and like needing to clear my head a little bit, learning that there's this thing called zone 2 running and it's more efficient and the best way to train was like elite.
Mm.
So zone 2 running is essentially running with your heart rate in a certain zone. It's you're in the second zone, in zone 2. Now that varies for a lot of people.
Based on your average heart rate.
Based on your max heart rate. So depending what your max heart rate is, that depends what your zone 2 is. There'll be ways you can find it.
It's like usually like sub 150. For me, I think it's like under 145. For you, it might be under 142 or something.
Yeah, no, I'm like, I think 150 to 140.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's where I think mine is. Whenever I'm like trying to run in what I call zone 2, in my head, my watch says a little bit sometimes it's zone 3, but 140 to 50 is what I'm like looking at. And that's just at a pace that you can still talk to the person next to you. So it's not about running to a pace that you know you can run, which is usually where the ego gets a bit of a stroke. So you got to like stop looking at the pace on your watch and just start looking at your heart rate.
Yeah.
And that made it so much more enjoyable for me to go running. Cause I'm like, oh, I don't have to go and flog myself today. I just got to go and do a run. And it still gamifies the idea of like looking at, I'm a big like looking at the stats, but it's like, okay, I've got to keep the heart rate down. It's like, okay, I've got to slow down to do that. It's like, this is great. I don't have to speed up to make the pace quicker.
How good. And then the fun is like, how fast can you go with your heart rate in zone 2? Like we did 25 Ks today at about a 5:20 pace.
Yeah.
I think I was 150 heart rate-ish. So a little bit out of zone 2.
I think I was 162, but we were talking the whole time, which adds short
chatting the whole time. But it's like, that's getting pretty quick, like going that pace with a low heart rate. So that's the zone 2 working. And it's essentially like the most efficient way to train. It's like, it's something to do with blood, oxygen, your heart. You can go right into it. I've done videos on it. I'm not dead sure of the facts, but it's what everyone's doing to run longer distances fast.
And it's just so you can enjoy and wake up the next day and run again. If you're like running at that full stride out pace, you're just cooked. It's so hard to like continue to run doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like where some people can go wrong is, like, especially with my content, and I need to be more clear on this going forward, is like, they think everything needs to be zone two. It's like, no, you still need some higher heart rate, higher intensity
different sessions
runs
for sure.
in there. But like, what most people are running with is like the 80-20 rule. We're talking a lot of percentages in this podcast, but 80% of your runs at a slow, controlled heart rate, 20% at a fast, higher intense pace. So that 80% is zone two.
Which is interesting because you'd almost think it's like flipped or more like 60-40, go hard for 60 and then you have your recovery runs, but it's the opposite. You have mostly recovery with like a good hit out once a week. Like I have with my coach on Thursday morning, we have like drills where like some days it's like 300s, then like 30-second rest, then 500, then 30-second rest. Some days it's like 1, 2, and 300-meter hill sprints where you walk or run back down the hill, but like gentle, and then sprint up, and then just doing all these different things to like add different variations so your body starts to learn it. And then your low-impact, long runs, in this low heart rate range. So it's been fun. It's like learning there's all these different versions of running, basically. And then like my ultra is a trail one, so it's like adding that element of trail stuff is like a whole new beast, which I know you're going to start having to do a bit of training and doing some stairs. And that's something that I spoke about as we're recording this. I don't know when this is going to come out, but a few weeks back from this episode, I think it was week 5 of my 100 days to 100Ks, I spoke about terrain and elevation training is so important. And for me, doing the Blue Mountains, I've got 4,500 meters elevation through trails, lots of stairs, lots of downhills. And I've just started training that, and I'm like, wow, it's a completely different muscle group and stuff. So you're going to have to get into it because you've got 2 ultras coming up in May. You said you're going to do one, then you pulled out of it, and now you told me on the run this morning, this might be the first take that you're going to actually do it again.
Yeah, I'm announcing it here. And that's why. So essentially, I said I was going to do the Bali Ultra. I was locked in Bali Ultra, 55Ks, 3,700 meters elevation.
That's a lot of elevation.
In humidity as well. Anyway, like thought long and hard about it and thought, oh, I'd just come back from Bali. I did 4Ks in Bali. I was like, I can't even run here. And then came back, got onto the podcast and said, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm going to injure myself. I'm going to do the Great Ocean Road Ultra. And then that was all fine until people started commenting.
I was going to comment. I didn't know you well enough. I would have if I knew you now.
You're being weak, weak as piss. And then, mate, like, I'm like, no, that's fine. I don't care, like, what people think. I don't care, like, whatever. Like, and I'm going to still do an ultra. And it's just eating away. Every time when I close my eyes to go to bed, I'm thinking about that one comment from someone like, look, do it, mate, but you're weak as piss. And I'm like, oh. Anyway, so then I thought about it, and my a great mate of mine, Charlie Crozier, and another one, Zach, are doing the Bali Ultra. And I'm like, look, I'm just going to do it, and then I'm going to back it up and do another one after just to prove to myself that I can do it. So I don't know if I'll get them done, but I'll give it a
you
red hot
get them
crack.
Done. It's just you got to finish. Like, the Ultras aren't, like, especially I think at our level, like, you're not trying to break the record and win the race. It's just trying to finish. Okay, what's it going to take to finish? Have you got any training planned between now and Bali to do some elevation training? Because doing the run we did today is very different to what you're going to be doing.
Very different. Yeah, that'll kick off next week. Pretty much every Saturday I'll be out there in the
trails.
Hopefully getting up to like 40Ks, 50Ks even.
Wow, you're going to try and get up to 50?
Yeah, I'll try and push just because I'm doing the back-to-back. So essentially the ultra in Bali is on the 10th. And then I think
it's my 30th birthday.
Great. There you go. Happy 30th for then. So on the 10th of May, and then the one in Australia on the Great Ocean Road is the 17th. So it's 7 days in between. So like, I want my body to bounce back as best as possible.
And you
got to
fly back and
Exactly.
It's a bit of a challenge. Tell me about the Great Ocean Road one. What it's sponsored by Brooks, and you're a Brooks athlete, which is pretty cool. That one looks like a beautiful race, huh?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I did it. It was my first ever marathon, was the Great Ocean Road.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. Tell me about any of the endurance races that you have already done, like obviously not ultra endurance just yet, but you've run a couple marathons. So
Yeah. So like the Great Ocean Road one was nice. It was my first ever one, but just like windy as, raining, like the scenery is beautiful, but it sucked.
Miserable.
Yeah, and it was my first marathon, so I was like, you know, head was just going wild. But got that done, 44Ks as well, like extra 2Ks on the end. It hurts. But got that one done, and then did the Melbourne Marathon October last year. Got a 3 hours 12, which is
that's quick.
A pretty solid pace. So I would love to do sub 3 this year. Discipline. But though, that's pretty much my... I've done plenty of half marathons in there as well.
Tell me about the Melbourne Marathon. What sort of training did you do for that to get up to a 3:12? And how'd you find the race? Because, like, I mean, we weren't moving today, but you're moving at a way faster pace than what we're doing, and for double the amount almost that we did today. So... What it's only an extra 50 minutes really than what we did today. Running quick. What was your training like for the Melbourne Marathon?
Training was good. I think pretty consistently with a lot of runners, it was quite crammed. Like, it wasn't the perfect training block. I'd gone traveling or something. I'd gone to South Korea and then LA like a month prior. So there was a huge, at least 3 weeks in there of pretty much no running, no proper running. And then I had a month to kind of pull it all together. And like, my coach is a bit of a wizard, and then I've got a bit of dog in me. So we pulled it together. I got to the start line, carbed up and hydrated, and kind of sent it and hung on.
Yeah, tell me about race day nutrition and then during race nutrition, because that's something I kind of struggled with my first marathon, albeit not with any training in me. But once I hit that 30K mark, oh, that last 12 was brutal.
Nutrition-wise, I think, and I'm still trying to dial it in, but from what I've found is, instead of just carb loading the night before, which a lot of people do, start carb loading 4 days before, 3 days before, and like really boosting your carbs up, like carbs at every meal. And then you can actually pull back a little bit the night before, because a lot of people go into these races super heavy stomached. That was me for the Great Ocean Row. Like, I just felt heavy. I felt fat, like just way overweight, you know?
Yeah.
So the Melbourne Marathon is like, I carved up 3-4 days prior continuously. Night before, had a solid dinner, but nothing crazy, but also ate, like, my dinner was like 5 p.m., went to bed at like 8, you know, so like, you've got plenty of time to digest. Got up that morning, had a coffee, piece of toast, I think, and a banana, got on a little spin bike just to get the bowels moving, got straight on the dunny, and then I was feeling light. So, and then an hour before the race, had... I think it's two. I had two aspirins. They're like a blood thinner. It helps kind of move things a little bit. A little bit of beetroot juice as well, and then a salt sachet an hour before. So, salts obviously.
And then throughout the race, just gels.
Yeah, gels. So my first ever marathon, the Great Ocean Road one, I had 7 caffeinated gels, which they're all 100 milligrams of caffeine each. It's 700 milligrams by the end, like tweaking. Dangerous territory. Yeah, you're tweaking. Like, I was at the end, I was like twitching. So this one, I figured out, like, I think I had about 7 gels, but I think like 2 of them were caffeinated. The rest were non-caffeinated. And then one every 20 minutes or every 5Ks. And just smashing them.
Fuck, I only had 1 gel in my whole run when I did my... That probably makes sense why I crashed at 30. Yeah.
The thing with the gels is, like, you don't have it when you feel like you need it. Yeah. You have it to prevent feeling. It's too late. Like, even when you feel full, like, you know, first 5Ks of the run, you're like, whoa, I don't need this. But just have it.
You can't chase that dragon. That's what I've definitely heard.
Exactly. But yeah, marathon running, to be honest, it does not do well on social media for me. It's purely a passion driven, you know, process and something I just enjoy running. And I think it's the ultimate kind of mental test.
Yeah. I think the same with like ultra. I thought my content was going to go, I mean, it doesn't really matter my content. Like, I'm so all over the place that no one really knows what they're getting with me, whether it's a podcast or anybody running or me doing a workshop at a school or me trying to promote merch. Like, there's so much shit that goes on with mine, but yeah, my like marathon stuff that I've been doing, my training is like somewhat flopped, but I mean, the podcast is doing well. It's just, to be honest, I've just been loving getting to meet people like you and have this access to incredible endurance athletes and learn their story and learn like, wow, that's like, yeah, there's just something special about someone who can override their brain when it says stop, when it says quit. It's like,
it is cool.
Get around that.
It is cool. Yeah. I think that the content wise, it's just, it's so unreachable for a lot of people, and it's like, it just doesn't resonate with
people. I don't think it is. I feel like a marathon. It's they reckon only 1% of the world like runs a marathon in their life. I think it's achievable. Like, I put out to my partner, and I was telling you this morning on this podcast, I was like, I'm doing 100. For all of you out there right now listening who are like, there's no way that I could run 10K. There's no way that I could run 20. I reckon you can. And we spoke about this morning too on the run, because when I first like was like, all right, I read David Goggins' book and I was like, all right, I'm going to get into running. I've always been like, running's not good for me. It's shit for my knees. Yeah. I'm a surfer.
all these excuses, all this noise, anything to not have to go for a run. And then I'd try and push it and go for a 5K run. And I'd be like, well, of course I'm going to be sore first time ever trying to do that. Whereas now I know I'd do like a slow 5K just to like make the body feel better. Like my partner, I said on the podcast, you're doing a half marathon with me. Like we did it this morning, you know. It's like, it's obviously we've got some training in us now and we've been doing it, but you can get through it with a bit of grit. You'll get through a 20K, I feel like. But most people out there will be like, nah, no way. But it's like, if you build up, I'm learning it's actually not that bad. Like we got through this morning, pretty easy to be honest. Like there was like a bit of pain towards the end.
Sure.
But we were like pretty cruising. Whereas most people, if you like build and go, okay, in 10 weeks, I want to do 20Ks. Just do like, all right, this week I'm going to go for five or like three 2K runs. Next week I'm going to go for three 3K runs. Next week I'm going to go add 500 meters before you turn around. Add 500 meters before you turn around. Eventually you're like, oh, I'm running 10Ks twice a week. Like my partner was doing like 3Ks and struggling. And now at our last run club the other day, she did eight and was like cruising and stoked for the day. And I'm like, she'll get there for the 20. She'll do 10 next week and then eventually it should be cruising for 20.
Yeah, once you get it started as well, you realize it's quite like possible. But I think like just people looking at like 42.2, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, 42.
No chance. Yeah. That's crazy.
40. But see, I always looked at like the numbers of it and I was like, it's not that big of a number. 40. It's not that much bigger than 20.
And it's not though, when you're running it, like it genuinely, if you've done the right training, like it doesn't start until 32Ks.
Yeah.
Like it, because it's all just, I mean, I'm sure it's different for people who do it like regularly and often.
Yeah.
But like in let's say you do Melbourne Mara, like the first 30Ks is such like a blur because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
There's thousands of people.
Yeah.
They're flying past you. You're flying past them. Like it's just so much. Yeah,
the environment happening of a race is so different to come
around. It's hostile. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's elbows like, out.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's gnarly.
Yeah.
Last little thing I want to ask you, what do you got coming up? Obviously, apart from the runs, like what are you looking forward to this year? Where's Louis Phillips going to be at the end of 2024?
Yeah, plenty happening in the running space. I think obviously main focus is interval and building that up at a really sustainable kind of rate. I don't need to blow anything out the water. We just need to be having people on there and enjoying it and using it. And then travel. So going to Europe, June, July.
Sick.
Hopefully see Izzy, my girlfriend, over there for a week or two. And then, just traveling with mates as well. So
love that.
Plenty of that. And, I don't know, just enjoying kind of doing what I do.
You're going to get to Ibiza?
Might go for a night with a mate.
One night? You're going to get some more.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. It does, but like I've got to go up, like I just have a couple of beers,
a good time.
Yeah,
if you go and it's a Wednesday night and Fish is playing, let me know. Maybe maybe I can work something out for you.
Oh, huge goat.
But man, this has been a great chat. It's been an incredible day getting to go for a run. It's always nice when you catch up with someone before a potty. Sometimes when you sit down and it's like the first time you chat, you get that little bit of awkward. So glad we got the little run in this morning. Had a great time doing it with you. Thanks for showing me around a bit of Melbourne running. My first run down here, I was like, fuck, I need to get some runs in. It's so much better when you got some with you. So thank you for getting me up at 6 a.m. and driving over and running in the cold. And then it warmed up and it was really nice. But I do finish all of the podcasts with the same question for everyone. And I'm excited to hear what you say for this. So what does being a good human mean to Louis Phillips?
It's a great question. And thanks very much for having me on. Being a good human, I think it's that element of like service to me and wanting to help others. I get so many questions all the time, like I'm lost, like I don't know what to do. The first thing that always comes back is start helping others. And I think the more people you help, the more purpose you find. And I think that's what being a good human is, just service and helping others.
Mate, very beautifully put. Well, thank you so much for jumping on. I'm going to leave in the show notes everything for interval, your social media. I'm sure if people get in touch with you, you do your best to get back to everyone, but mate, it's been an amazing chat. Thanks so much for jumping on Good Humans Podcast.
And thanks for getting down to Melbourne. Thanks for having me on.
It's been a pleasure.